Good afternoon. It's 5:30. I'd like to call the April 2nd, 2012 meeting of the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Kristen, would you please take roll call?
Peggy? Hauser? Gass?
Here.
Murfo?
Here.
Struthers?
Here.
Weigel?
Here.
Miller?
Here. Hey, great turnout. You have in front of you an agenda. Are there any additions or corrections or changes? Do I have a motion to approve the agenda as it stands?
So moved.
Second? Okay. Motion by Gass, second by Struthers. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, the motion stands and the agenda stands. Minutes from last month. Okay, moved by Gass, seconded by Weigel. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, minutes are approved as stands. And it's at this time that we have public comments. I think we'll pass on those, being we have none. So we'll move on to old business, and we have none of that. So we'll move on to new business. And with that, would staff please present Ordinance 1-12 here?
You'll have to remove it from the table first. This item on the table.
Oh, thank you. Let me see. Okay, this is motion to remove. Okay, is there a motion to remove last month's business from the table?
Cigarette business, right?
So moved. Yeah. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Nick. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay. Thank you.
If you'll recall, earlier this year, I was before you with our cleanup portion of the amendments to the land development regulations. This time I'm coming more focused just on the 35-acre minimum of the A1 zone district. Again, these are being brought forth, staff-initiated, in accordance with Section 15.30 of the Story County Land Development Regulations. Just a couple background slides why we're here. The A1 zone district requires a minimum of 35 acres for construction of a rural, non-farm, single-family dwelling. Currently on the books, there are three exceptions to that 35-acre minimum: a legally established lot of record, and that may be built on, regardless of the parcel size; the farmstead exception, and that is a minimum of 1 acre; and the LISA exception, and that's a minimum of 1 acre as well. Over the years, actually in the past 2-3 years most notably, a lot of concerns have been voiced, everywhere from the extreme that 35 acres is too restrictive to it's not restrictive enough. And last spring, the current Board of Supervisors directed staff to look at the issue and bring to the table some sort of a, possibly bring to the table some sort of a change that would address these concerns, and with the one specifically that 35 acre is more too restrictive. We've heard the entire gamut of concerns. The mortgage crisis hit us. Having a mortgage on 35, 20, 18 acres is really difficult to finance. The banks are not wanting to do that. Can we subdivide it and have a smaller lot? You've had a couple of those that have had to go through a plan amendment and then a rezoning and then a subdivision, like a 9-month process. That was one of the concerns that led to this. Also, we have the second and third generation kids heading home back to Iowa. The land cannot be divided, maybe because one of the three exceptions don't apply, or it just simply cannot be divided for other purpose, for another purpose. And we don't allow two houses on one parcel, and so those kids are looking at, you know, having to buy 35 acres, and then it gets back to that mortgage issue. Kind of a cyclical effect there. We have a pretty ambitious strategic plan for local food production. One of that is to develop 100 new beginning farmers, specifically on local food, by the year 2020. We've heard concerns voiced by those wanting to enter the arena of agricultural production, especially local food, that, you know, buying 35 acres to 40-acre piece is out of reach. They simply can't do it. This might allow to create some smaller lot sizes that they could live there on the property and then farm for local food production. We've also had concerns voiced to our department that our rural landscape is becoming very monotonous. The farmsteads that were there at one point are now disappearing as row crop. And so those were all taken in. Those are just some I thought of when I was putting this presentation together. I don't mean just planning and zoning staff or planning and development staff. The board has heard it, and probably you guys have heard it as well. It's been some comments that have been voiced over several years. After the board directed us to look at it, we looked at some geographic information system analysis of the 35-acre rule, what some different options are out there, presented that in a joint meeting to Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Supervisors. I think it was October last year, maybe November, but late fall last year. After that, we were directed to come forth with some changes, proposed changes, and it was made clear that doing away with the 35-acre minimum is not a reality. Don't come forward with that. And increasing that is not what we want to do. Look for something, some sort of compromise. So staff took those words to heart, and what I have before you is what staff is offering up as a compromise. In essence, we are adding, amending three different areas of land development regulations. Again, keep in mind this is aside from the cleanup too. This is specifically the 35-acre. To chapter two, the definitions chapter, adding a definition for residential partial subdivision. Amending chapter four, which is our base zone district designations. That's where the A1 requirements are set forth. Adding a fourth exception. I already mentioned we have three. Now we would have four if this was ultimately adopted to that 35-acre minimum. And then lastly, amending Chapter 6 to define the requirements for a residential partial subdivision. I'm going to go back to that second one, amending Chapter 4. I'm sure you might, well, staff, are you concerned that you now have four exceptions to check? Up until 5 years ago, we had four exceptions. We have the AR plan designation on the books for 10, 15 years. That was done away with when the new county development plan was adopted. So we've gone three to four. It's not a number that would be difficult for staff to handle with property research. Specifically, delving entities, this was all defined in the staff report, so I'm not going to reiterate this word for word, but again, as I said, we're proposing amending Chapter 2 definitions, defining what a residential partial subdivision is. The thing I want you to note in this, the property for which this would apply has to contain a dwelling or a farmstead, as defined in the ordinance. It cannot be vacant land for this to apply. And that is really trying to hold true to what the intention is of the 35-acre minimum, which is to protect prime agricultural lands. And these have already been taken out of production if there's already a dwelling or a farmstead on the property. Chapter 4, this is where, in Section E, this is where we define the three exceptions. You see A, B, and C there. Letter D there is adding the fourth exception then, if the parcel has been created through a residential partial subdivision. So that would be one of the exceptions to 35-acre minimum if this was adopted. And then really the heart of the proposed changes deal with Chapter 6, our land division requirements. And bear with me, I'm going to do these individually. There are several criteria that all have to be satisfied for this type of subdivision to come forth for review by the Board of Supervisors. I'm going to go through 1 to 9 and stop me if you have questions or any clarifications as I go through each one, if you'd like. A subdivision may be submitted for review and approval as a residential parcel subdivision when all the following are true. Number one, the lots created by the subdivision are intended to be used for residential purposes. Residential purposes only. They may have a home business permit because that is associated, but that's aside from this. The primary use of the parcel has to be for residential purposes. Number two, only two lots may be created. As staff were of the opinion, you go beyond two lots, that development is really starting to feel like a residential subdivision rather than just a simple split of an existing house into another buildable house, and that needs to truly go through rezoning and either a minor or a major subdivision depending on the number of lots that are being created. Number three, the assessment property report card, or record card. This is a fancy word that says it's on the tax roll according to the Story County Assessor. For the property shall show a single-family dwelling or a farmstead as defined in the ordinance. So if someone comes in and they're applying for a zoning permit for single-family dwelling, we can't apply this. Once the house is constructed, they may come in and ask for this to be applied. But that house has to be taxed already as a single-family dwelling. that's to really keep that concern alleviated on number two, that or the first one, that we're starting with vacant land and we're not bypassing the rezoning and subdivision processes. Number four, subdivision includes no land set apart for new streets, alleys, parks, staircase, open space, school property, or public use. School property or public use, again, this would be the more in-depth subdivision. Number five, the subdivision has to lie wholly in the A1 zoning district. We already have the R1 and R2 and AR minimum lot sizes that are appropriate for the subdivision processes that are already on the books. When it's within the boundaries of the Ames River Fringe, it has to meet two tests, too. It has to be zoned A1, but then the property has to be designated on the Ames River Fringe as a rural service and agricultural conservation area. This is the tier, the designation on the Ames River Fringe. The City of Ames has waived their subdivision review authority. The other two, the city is involved in one, and jointly we're involved in the other. So this would only apply in the one where Ames has waived their review authority. On that, I have, following the Ames River Fringe agreement, I have sent this on to the City of Ames for their comments. To date, I have not received feedback yet. Number six, both parcels have to contain a minimum of 1 acre on a net basis each, and then all side or rear setbacks have to be met in order to create these two lots. All resulting parcels have access to adjoining public roadway, either by actual road frontage or by easement. No variances from subdivision and zoning standards shall be granted in order to accomplish the residential parcel subdivision. The Board of Adjustment cannot have established this parcel through a variance. It has to be something that's been legally established, but not by a variance for this to put in play. And lastly, the existing parcel shall not have been created through a previously approved residential parcel subdivision. This doesn't allow someone to take a hypothetical 20-acre piece that has a house, split it into 5 acres and 15 acres. On the 15-acre piece, come back in, split that into 5 and 10 acres. On the 10-acre, come back in. We're having a multitude of subdivisions then come in, and this is circumventing the other regulations. Those are the 9 criteria that in total have to be met for this process to be put in play. The procedure, the Board of Supervisors annually does define the procedures for all of our different types of development applications. We would actually like to see this process similar to the agricultural subdivision plat, and no disrespect to you, but we're trying to make this as simple as possible and take it straight to the Board of Supervisors, like ag plats do. Minor subdivisions, majors come through you. Those do have more development impacts than we anticipate this would. And the submittal requirements are outlined. I didn't repeat those up here, but they're on the staff report, and those need to be added to. They're similar to those of minor and agricultural plats. Your alternatives are up there, and one thing I do want to note, if you do feel like you're ready to make action tonight, it's on the entire revisions to land development regulations, those that were discussed earlier this year, the cleanup, as well as the. And on the ones that were discussed earlier this year, remember those were generally the cleanup ones, there were some questions that we left with whether or not the permit chapter 18, I think it's 18, I better check. We had added some language about including the health department in the review process and making sure all their regulations are met. Quite honestly, we have, with sharing Kristen on chapter 17 permits, on a 50-50% basis now through funding and having the health department located with us now, we share a common office space. We've internally put procedures in place that we don't feel this is necessary to make this change, so we would respectfully ask that any recommendation you forward on would not include the changes to Chapter 17. And I can repeat those if you want me to. Any have questions? With that, I am sure you do have questions.
And down in my area, there's several, you know, former farmstead sites that have all been, the buildings have all been raised, but there is still a 911 sign there. Would it be possible for the landowner to sell, for example, 6 acres and someone to come in there and build 2 houses?
It would not, according to our current definition of a farmstead. Currently, our definition of a farmstead very clearly states it cannot have been converted to row crop production. So in that case, by had it been left vacant, even if the foundation's removed, if we can...
Or a house.
Or even if it just has not been... The minute it goes into crop production, then that farmstead exception applies. Or the farmstead exception disappears.
Well, if they tear off all the buildings, but they have a farm,
right.
Then it could be...
It could. We'd go back through old aerial photography to verify there was a farm there. Or old tax records, anything but anecdotal. You can't say, hey, my brother used to swing on a tire swing there, and that would be proof to us.
Other questions?
Yes. There were a couple cases that we talked about back in February, and I believe one of the cases has been handled, and I don't know about the other, but I'll go through both of them. There's a parcel, 35 acres or more, and the farmer wants to split it into a where all the buildings are and leave the rest of it to be farm ground because the banks won't do a loan. So right now the ordinance allows that, and it is not a subdivision of any sort. It's just done, right? Later, a kid wants to join the farming operation, and the 5 acres that they've created, he wants to split off an acre or so they can build a house. This is where we would do the residential parcel subdivision for both of those and solve that problem, right?
Right. The first split will take the 40 acres, and they're taking 35 and 5. That could be done even with the proposed language through a platted survey. And actually, any time if a platted survey could apply, this would not take away the right for someone to do a platted survey. What it would do, though, if someone did a platted survey to create lots and they weren't buildable, they simply were not buildable. They'd have to go through this process to create those lots. And you're right, that second parcel then, the 5-acre piece, to further divide that, because I'm assuming that that's where the house was, would then be the residential parcel subdivision.
Okay. So the kid can end up with the parcel, the parents have their parcel, you end up with the two lots, everything's just fine. Another case that we talked about is just a little bit different from that, and that is, say, somebody wishes to move on to the country. They need to have 35 acres. So they have the money to do this, but they go to the bank for the mortgage, and the bank says, no, we don't want to do this mortgage on 35 acres. We'll do it on 5 acres and 30 acres. There's no house there. So does this help that at all?
It does not apply to vacant land.
So
and that is where we still would allow for them to go forward with a variance. But that variance, if it's granted for that, would prohibit future subdivision of it. So they still have the option to rezone it and subdivide it too, as currently is. Yep.
So you would have a parcel which would sit out there and look a lot like all the other parcels, and the other parcels may be able to have a residential parcel subdivision because they did not were not created through a variance process. This one would not be allowed to do it because it was created through
right. And that's trying to be true to the why a variance was granted for the unique hardship test.
Yeah, the, I guess where it gets to be a little bit of a question of substantial justice is the person had absolutely no desire to divide the parcel, but was somewhat forced to divide the parcel by the bank. And I guess that's just...
And that's where they could still, they could still go through a minor subdivision. They could still rezone it and go through a minor subdivision. Or a plat
of
survey.
If they went to a minor subdivision, would they be able then to come back with a residential partial subdivision?
A minor subdivision would allow it to come forward. It's only a residential... Because a minor subdivision would establish a lot and probably would... More than, but we'd have more control on it in that aspect and the number of lots and layout than if we had the residential parcel subdivision subsequently. One thing I failed to mention, I meant to include a slide on this. This is, we went through, looked at other counties, John Wayne County, for example, every farmstead split they do, every plat of survey goes to the Board of Supervisors. They have a farmstead, I think it's farmstead subdivision, something very simple like that. Took some of that language from them, but we did not want to apply this to every farmstead split. The plat of survey process is working well, and we wanted to maintain that. Johnson County has something similar to Lynn County, but maybe in between what we were proposing and the restrictiveness of Lynn County. Also, we know that as staff, it's incumbent on us that this year and the next, if this is approved, to really look at it and see how much it's used and if it's being, I don't expect a rash of them to come, I mean, that we get inundated with these. There's about 1,100 parcels to which this could apply potentially as of last October. Do I expect 551 here and the remainder of the following? I don't. I expect half a dozen to a dozen annually. But if we see that trend creeping up and that this may be something that's abused or we've written in a manner that more than how we wanted it to work, we'll be right back in front of you guys and the Board of Supervisors.
Couple of things, questions I have.
Please sit down.
Yeah. Pardon?
Okay, if I sit down and answer through here. I'm going to sit down. If you don't
mind. Yeah.
Thank you.
So the Board of Supervisors said go out and research this, and the way you did that is by checking with different counties throughout the state to see how they're handling this. You mentioned Lynn and Johnson.
I did a couple ways. One, COZO's county zoning officials, I set up a survey just on what their minimum lot size is, how they implement it, do they have any exceptions to the rules. Not very good response on that. I sent the link out to our Yahoo, our listserv. What I did is I followed up to that and just we had some dialogue and received from other counties. A lot of the counties that have the 35-acre minimum wrestle with what we do, and that's quite honestly because a lot of the counties that have the 35-acre minimum adopted zoning after we did and basically adopted our ordinance, and not as we've amended as it was originally written. So not a huge response, but those I did hear from are the ones with which I followed up.
Thank you. And I actually have two questions yet. This is on the requirements, one of the nine you had on the ninth requirement there. So it said, you know, once you split them apart, I'll give the example, I guess. Maybe you could take 30 acres and you take two for the buildings and you've got then 28 acres of vacant land. So that's been one, we call it the residential parcel subdivision. That 28 acres cannot be, that cannot occur again here with the parcel subdivision.
No, if they wanted to further divide that, they would need to rezone it and either do a minor subdivision or a major subdivision, depending on the number of lots they wanted to create.
one last question for me, and then I'll turn it over. As you went through this process, do you have some expectation that will happen, or is it just kind of wide open here?
I think my crystal ball obviously is kind of broken with this, but I think by the end of the year, if this is approved and put into play, I could think of two or three that would go through it. That they don't meet any of the exceptions right now to the 35-acre minimum. There's a house. They're 8 to 10 acres each. They're second, third generation family members that want to move back. That they'll be coming in for it. But beyond that, you know, if the public's out there clamoring for something like this, I don't know. I don't know how many we'll get beyond that.
Thank you. Other questions?
You mentioned it's short of $1 a month. Is that the important measure that almost that
mentioned? Oh, it's the 35-acre minimum. Yeah.
Let's go one last question, I hope. You have a current 35-acre parcel. And a person wishes to let their child have a house next to them. So there's two residential parcels. Would they both be the small 1-acre-ish parcels? And then a large remainder parcel? And could they do that because of mortgage situations again and just have an unbuildable large parcel?
The way it's written right now is you can only create two lots. But they could potentially create an outlot. Because an outlaw is considered not buildable. And I don't think we count that in the minimum. I'll check the definition of a lot. I'm not sure. We may need to call it development lots. If you called it development lots, that would allow for the creation of an outlot, like you just said. But it would have to be specified as an outlot.
I think that would be within the general spirit and intent of what we're trying to do. And I like the procedure of it just being done by the Board of Supervisors. I think it is confusing for the public sometimes, particularly on subdivisions, to come into a public hearing thinking that they're going to have a whole lot of input into it when really the process is pretty cut and dried on a subdivision, so just having the Board of Supervisors hopefully will avoid some of that confusion.
So I've got a lot of questions. Any discussion?
Do you have a feel for how many in the county currently have two houses on them?
I did the analysis, and I could go down and find it. I don't. It's
150.
About 50 is what Ryan's saying. I know of those 11. I don't know why I know this number, but of those 1,100 that are currently zoned A1 under 35 acres. Contain a single-family dwelling, 197 or so are in the floodplain. But, I mean, that's one dwelling. But what this will do, that's a leads me another point. For those parcels that do have two houses on it currently that are non-conforming to our regulations, this is an easy way for them to process, for them to go through to bring that into conformance rather than having to rezone it and go through a minor or major subdivision. I guess a minor. And this we'll use on a couple properties that are current enforcement matters right now to bring those into conformance if it's adopted. But I can email you that number. I can email it to commission. I'm not sure off the top of my head.
I can think of currently three properties in my area that have two dwellings. In two of those situations, the parents have died, and the dwelling is sitting there abandoned and deteriorating. In the third situation, it was two separate lots, and the one person bought out the other people who left but can't afford to tear down their dwelling. So, again, sits there deteriorating, eyesore. When you're talking about family members, eventually somebody's going to die, and then you got this house on, you know, right next to you. I just don't see a reason to accommodate more of that. There's a lot of places to build. There's a lot of places to live. And my son came back to farm, and I certainly don't want him right next to me. And there's lots of options that way. I just don't see this as being beneficial to our county. I see it as just another way to have rundown houses that eventually nobody can afford to take down or take care of.
I can go back to your question. What I would propose if you were to act on recommendation under section 6.60, the heart of the section A, where item number two, where it says only two lots may be created, say only two development lots may be created. We define development lot in the ordinance as a lot on an approved plat designed and intended to be used for a principal permitted use in the applicable zone district. So it would not include an outlot. That would be good. And that's what we've done with the other ordinance. That's how we, if you recall, Mr. Boswell's subdivision in Northtown had more than four lots, but several were outlots because they were not intended for subdivision. That's how they were processed as a minor subdivision.
I think that'd be a good idea, and it actually may move to improve some of the situation that you were talking about, in that if there is a parcel out there, it has a couple houses on it, and it's just running down being deteriorated, then the owner certainly could go in, split off one of the houses, make it a marketable property, which then somebody could buy and maintain, rather than it just being an eyesore. Now, if the owner doesn't want to do that, and they just want it to they want to eventually tear it down, they can still do that, but at least they have an option. And that may help by making them developable parcels. Then you can end up with two reasonably sized rural parcels, a large non-developable parcel, and it may make it easier to finance the whole operation. So I think that's a good idea.
Quite frankly, maybe I'm dense, but I don't understand the fact that we've got a couple of buildings, a couple of farmsteads deteriorating, abandoned, and so on. I not understand the correlation with this proposed changes.
You build another house to put your family in, and supposedly that's what the need is. Then eventually one generation dies, and now all of a sudden you got two houses on one property, even though they're now two lots. You see what I'm saying? Nobody really wants somebody that close to them when you move in the country, you know.
These are existing properties. These are existing houses. So that really wouldn't fall into play, would it, since they're existing?
Well, once Nancy's concerned, that this is not going to change anything with that. Her concern is that it may create more two houses next to each other, and then at some point it may become that, I guess. But.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And you couldn't do that. Well, I have a problem with Big Brother telling me I can't do that to my own land. But the county loves my tax payments, I feel. So you got to look at it both ways, I think. I know.
Are you in favor of these changes or not?
I would be in favor of eliminating all of them. I don't know why. Leanne's plenty busy. She's smaller staff. I don't know why she has to worry about 35-acre minimum.
That's true.
We have sanitation people that worry about if the septic can handle it.
Yes.
What difference does it make if it's an acre or 35? We already have.
Not
a, if you have to have 3 acres to make your septic work, then the magic number is 3 acres. So why do we have to have a 35-acre?
And the reality is what you brought up, Stephen, is that, you know, this mortgage situation in terms of what the banks are willing to do is a real complicated issue, and I don't see that going away real quickly. You know,
I have yet, I'm an old farmer too. I don't know anybody taking real good farm ground and making houses on it except big developers north of Ankeny, around Ames.
Yeah, really.
Nevada. My farms, I've got to cover my stuff. I'd love someone to come and buy a couple acres and build a house on it because it hasn't ever been farmed. It's a 35-acre minimum.
I don't know. I got like 8 lots available just north of town on my way home.
Yes, there is a development out there.
Short of eliminating the 35-acre requirement completely, I think this goes a long way to eliminating some of the problems that the board talked about back in February, or before, I can't remember when we sat down with them. October. My, how time flies when you're having fun. Some of the concerns that they expressed from citizen complaints and some of what they stated as their own goals. I did not hear the board saying that they wanted to eliminate the 35-acre requirement completely, but they did want to provide an ability for situations like we discussed tonight without having to go through a lot of bureaucratic hoops. So we're moving the ball. It may not be a complete touchdown, but it certainly is moving in the direction that I think is consistent with what I heard the board say, and certainly is an improvement compared to what we have today.
We've kind of moved from questions to discussion, and good discussion all over. I appreciate it. I think what I'd like to do is see if we can get a motion here in a second, and then see if there's any further discussion that would go with it.
Mr. Chair, I would like to make the motion that we accept alternative number 2, and the condition be that we insert the word development on section 6.60A, line 2, or number 2, where it says only 2 lots may be created, that we have it mean only 2 development lots may be created. Pardon me? Oh, I'm sorry, yes. So it'd be only two development lots created. On number one, how would you say that, Leanne? On A1?
In section 6.6, subsection A, item number 1, 2, and go ahead and add number 6.
So one would say the development lots created, yes. Number 2 would say the only two development lots, and 6?
Both development lots.
Both development lots. A second.
Is there, do we want to do anything with this number 17 that we talked about, chapter 17? Dan, do you want to exclude that? Would you like to include that in your motion? Yeah. I would sure think Ryan could help you out a little bit more.
The initial draft amended section 17.20 and added item number B, and we're suggesting don't include this, but this is what we had originally thought. Prior to issuance of the zoning permit certification by the Story County Environmental Health Department stating that sewage disposal and water storage or supply systems for the proposed structure has met minimum requirements, and approval has been granted. So internally, we set up a process, and it's working really well. And quite honestly, I don't want to put our department in the role of enforcing their regulations, and that could be a very slippery slope if we have that in there.
David, is that okay with you in the motion? Stephen?
Yes.
A second? Okay. So we've had a motion by Struthers, seconded by Gast. We're open for discussion again.
There's been discussion regarding eliminating some of the bureaucracy in terms of going directly to the Board of Supervisors for approval as opposed to going through all of the loopholes, you know, the loops. Where does all of that, this change, envelop accomplishing that, eliminating the bureaucracy so more can go directly to the supervisors?
Yes, I would ask you, Leah.
You could look at it both ways. Some for the ones that would come forward using this process, in the past, the only way they could accomplish it would be to rezone the property, come to a planning and zoning commission, go to the Board of Supervisors for 3 considerations, come back to the commission with the subdivision, and go to the Board of Supervisors for consideration of the subdivision. So 6 meetings down to 1. It would go just right to the Board of Supervisors.
Which ones would qualify for that? If it wasn't a development subdivision?
The residential subdivision.
If it was not?
No, if it was.
If it was a residential parcel subdivision, would have to go through all of these
the residential
6 meetings.
This new process, the residential parcel subdivision. If someone's taking vacant ground and they want to rezone it, it's still going to have to follow the rezoning process. And
so the key is the rezoning?
Right. This only applies in an A1 zoning district. If they want something other than A1, they'd have to go through a rezoning.
If they're doing a full subdivision, then they would have to come to the zoning commission and then to the Board of Supervisors. If it's no rezoning, but it's a full subdivision, you have to come here, have a public hearing, and then go to the Board of Supervisors for approval. The residential partial subdivision doesn't have to come here. It goes directly to the Board of Supervisors. And if a person is just splitting off their farmstead, then that doesn't have to come here. That just goes to the Board of Supervisors. But other subdivisions have to come here and then go to the Board of Supervisors. So there are a couple cases where we what the staff chose to do for the residential parcel subdivision is follow a process similar to where an ag plat, which just goes directly to the board. And I think, in my opinion, that is good because frequently I've seen people, the neighbors get noticed, they show up at the meeting, and they have an expectation when they come here of being able to change the world. Well, on something like this, it is just so cut and dried that there's not a whole lot that can be done other than, you know, it follows all the rules that needs to be approved. And so there's a little frustration. It goes directly to the Board of Supervisors. I think it's better for the applicant and maybe better for the neighbors.
Are we ready to vote? Okay. Roll call, please.
Miller. Weigel. Struthers. Marceau.
Yes.
Gast.
Yes.
Kowser. Beggy.
Yes. Motion passes. Thank you. Appreciate your votes, too. This is nice to have some differences of opinions here to get it out, flush it out. And with that, move on to other business.
This reduces the bureaucracy for this one class of things. So again, moving the ball in the right direction.
As you probably already noticed, we recently transitioned to a new and improved website. So just to help with that transition a bit, we wanted to kind of take you through and kind of point out where everything is that might pertain to you, as well as answer any questions you may have, so as to easier use of it. Mostly what you would be interested in are the agendas and minutes, and you can get those in a number of places, but most notably, this is the home page. And right here on the left-hand side is agendas and minutes. You can go in here, and the website, for some reason, is pretty slow today, so that came up pretty quick. You can either choose to, down here in Land Development Zoning Regulations, you can either choose to view the most recent agenda or view all agendas. By clicking on that, you can view it. You can open up the meeting materials, such as staff reports and the company materials, as well as print them off. One issue that we found that was brought to my attention, if you go directly to the agenda from the website, you will not be able to just easily print off all the materials, including the agenda and previous minutes. You have to print off this agenda and then go into each one of these documents by itself and print it out. There's a way to make that easier for you. The thing that's probably the most interesting to me about this new website is that on the back end of everything, there's some really powerful applications that really make it easier, especially for Kristen, to do her job for you, which is get the agendas out to you, get the minutes. Within the website, on the what we call the back end that you don't see, she's now able to create the agendas and the minutes straight in the website, publish those. At the time of publishing, if you are signed up for notifications, you will instantly receive a notification that the agenda has been published with a link in your email to go directly there, view everything that you need to view, and perhaps print off the materials. In order to get set up with that, what you need to do, and Chris and I talk about this afternoon, I'm not sure if we actually did it, we should be able to already automatically add you to the notification list, but there's a bug in the website right now that they're working on, so we're not able to do that, so you'll have to go in and add yourself. What you do, and perhaps, did you end up actually emailing them, adding them?
I wasn't able to add you because of the glitch, but I did send out an email with steps, but you can do it on your own, and Ryan can show you the first step.
You should have already received an email, and then all you need to do from there is click on the link to confirm that you actually want to be notified. So that way we're just not, you know, spamming people, and you actually, you want to be added. So then at that point, you're added. Kristen publishes the agendas and the minutes from now on. They instantly go to you. She won't have to put together the email that she sends out, saves her time, saves everybody time. So, but if you wanted to, for instance, be notified of other agendas or any other the comings and goings in the county, you can go up here where it says Citizens Health Center and click on the Notify Me page and sign up for any one of these lists that are on here. You can see all of them that are in here. Job postings, bid postings, calendars, and then the agenda center. So if for some reason you also deleted the email, you could go in here directly and sign yourself up for, let's see, where is that? The Planning and Zoning Commission. And you can choose to either be notified via email and or text message. Either way, once you notify, you set yourself up, you will receive a text and or email asking you to confirm, and then once you confirm, then you're added to the list. So that's how you get on that. Mostly the website is more intuitive to use than our previous one. Obviously the fonts are bigger, colors are more vivid, easier to use in that way. But if you want to get to where the Planning and Zoning Commission page is, it's not where it used to be under our Planning and Development page. You actually have to go to where it says here, Your Government, and go here where it says Boards. You can either click here, or you can go over on the drop-down list. Either way, you go to the same place. This will clicking on the boards and commissions will just give you a list of the boards and commissions that way, down here on the side. But the drop-down, again, it's kind of slow. The drop-down takes you straight to it. Boards and commissions. And Planning and Zoning Commission. And this is where all the information is for the Planning and Zoning Commission. And this is also another place where you can find the agendas and minutes, as well as audio transcripts of the meetings. The department, the actual Planning and Development Department, if you wanted to review our land development regulations, county development plan, Angels and Fringe Plan, etc., is under departments, so they're kind of separate in that way. But it's the information is much more condensed and less busy. And this is how you kind of get to our page. Applications and permits. You probably already know that we've condensed all of our applications into one. So instead of going to the applications permits, somebody wants a permit, permit application comes right up. we will be working on. This website does give us the ability to create online forms, so right within the website, put together an online form that people can fill out zoning permit, floodplain permit, home business permit applications directly online. Hopefully, if we can work through some of the kinks within departments, eventually adding e-payment as a service as well. Yes, an actual, that's not, we have a fillable form currently, and but this will actually be within the website. And the cool thing about the website, again, going back to the back end, somebody, we can set it up now that somebody fills out a permit application. Once they hit send, it immediately emails, we can set it up to immediately email every single person in the office, and we can automatically route the review process via the website on the back end. So it's a very powerful, I mean, it's not, the website isn't just the information that you see on the website. There's a lot of what I call applications on the back end that will ultimately, once people get used to them, make our jobs easier. So I guess I kind of think I went through most everything. If you have any questions, yeah. The current cases are within the agendas. We don't publish the... Yeah.
So the agendas are only for the current agenda as opposed to 2, 3, 4 agendas that the current case may not get to the agenda to settle on that. Am I correct?
We don't publish information about the current cases until they're actually been approved for the agenda. Sure.
I think what we used to do is once it ends up with reflective of limitations on the old site,
we would, once it was ready to go to Planning and Zoning Commission or Board of Adjustment, whatever entity, we'd put it under current cases, and then say it came before you tonight, tomorrow morning we'd have to go in, totally recreate it, and put it under Board of Adjustment and Board of Supervisors. It's kind of it evolves on its own now. And when we can get on the back end all these steps set up, it will automatically, hopefully, just be able to be pushed out to the next meeting. I would venture guess that you were probably the only person that even knew we had a current cases out there. I doubt that was ever. It was really buried in there, too. And the reason we had it there was so that we'd have a way to hyperlink our agenda to staff reports, because we had limitations on posting things out there on size, and it was our fix to be able to give the information to people, and this is a better solution in the long run.
Is it possible that a current case would be out there but not make it on the agenda in the way it was done before?
No. It had to be on agenda for us to even create it in current cases.
Okay.
We operationalized that unless, if someone just, they used to submit a subdivision and it just went nowhere, it never went, it was never published to the website.
With the way you're gathering information now on the new website, with people filling out the forms and everything, moving along efficiently, is there a possibility that you will have all the information gathered for a case ahead of or after the time when the agenda closes, so that you will have information out there that is, or you have information which could be out on the web page for the, not this coming agenda, but the agenda after it, which is where you are heading. I mean, it would seem to me that when that agenda closes, if the agenda closed today for the next meeting, and tomorrow somebody comes in and fills out all the paperwork, and you have it all ready to go, are you going to then create an agenda, start the agenda for the next meeting, or just hold it?
Essentially, those application materials just sit on the desk until we get ready to build the next agenda.
This is all electronic nowadays, so it's a virtual desk.
That's an...
Just like on tonight, you recommended that the ordinance goes on the Board of Supervisors agenda for May 8th. So that's in the minutes. So then you would know to go to the Board of Supervisors agenda for May 8th and to see what happened at that meeting. So it's kind of like a timeline that way.
Life is good.
And once the agendas are posted and published in the newspapers, that's when the agenda goes online, and then all the information is there. And say we get some information, say the applicant turns in something after we've posted it, we still then link it up so that you get it. As soon as we get it, you get it. And on the notify me as well. On the notify me as well if I make a change. Say I made a change to tonight's agenda yesterday on the web. I shoot that out so you would get that notification that the agenda's been changed, that you need to go look at it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ryan. Okay, so now we're on to follow-up from other items, Board of Supervisors.
The only thing I want to mention on this, a couple of things. There was a handout for tonight. It's a study that Iowa State did on local food, and just want to share it with you all. And in that vein, on April 16th, there is a meeting that Iowa State Extension is hosting. They've approached the county and have said we realize you have some staff limitations with the number you are right now, and our charter is to support agricultural in Iowa in all forms. So we want to help Story County achieve your goals and your strategic plan for local foods. So they are putting on a meeting of some partnerships in April to see what strategies Extension and other entities can help Ryan and me and the rest of the department achieve with some very lofty goals. So I'm pleased that is occurring.
Okay.
I don't have details beyond just that. That's it.
Okay, thank you. That brings us to commission comments. We'll start down there with Dave.
That's good.
Okay, good.
I don't have any other
questions. Nancy? Mm-hmm. Huh? Nancy?
It still happens. month or so ago, there was a meeting of the Board of Supervisors, cities, and whatnot dealing with economic development. And they had a big meeting in this room. And it was my impression when the meeting was over that the Board of Supervisors was leaning toward creating a kind of a circuit rider position that would assist with economic development, possibly be part of the planning department, but that was to be decided. And it was also my impression that they were going to address the Story County Economic Development Committee at their next meeting, which has already taken place, and they didn't do that. So I was wondering what the situation is.
I don't have a lot of good answers. I will tell you, to my knowledge, when the board has gone out on their liaison assignments and met with various city councils, they have discussed economic development and how the county may assist. I don't know how many communities they've had, with how many they've had those discussions and the specific ones. But our activity from our end and our department has been very minimal since that stakeholder meeting. We have the CPAT, and once the CPAT report, yeah.
Yeah, they created a nice document, and then that document went forward to the cities and the Board of Supervisors to find out where they wanted to take it.
Yeah.
And that was the meeting that I was referring to, where the now what meeting.
Right. Well, you're talking about the potential for the economic development manager that would facilitate with all the communities. There's other areas that I've been wondering about too. Like, you know, where's the committee to put forth the mission statement in terms of this is what we really want story time to look like,
mm-hmm.
5 years, 10 years, and so on. I haven't heard any development from that. I guess I need.
Well, at the meeting I was at, it was my impression that the Board of Supervisors was going to lean on the Economic Development Committee to put the mission statement together. But
there is an Economic Development Committee.
Well, what's it called?
It's the Story County Economic Development Group. Yeah. The various small towns.
Well, every city has a member, and the Board of Supervisors has a member.
Yeah. Okay, but this is part of that as opposed to a separate as a result of the CCAP. Am I correct? We don't have a separate committee as a result of the CCAP investigation and report. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So where is doing
that? At the meeting, which took, when did the meeting take place? About a month ago.
Longer, probably.
Was it? God,
it was,
flies when you have fun.
No, I think it was January, February.
About that.
Huh.
Yes, because I remember
asking. Okay. So 2 months ago. At that meeting, it seemed to be a consensus of the board and the cities present that the Story County Economic Development Committee would take on the responsibility of putting together the mission statement and organizing themselves under the direction of the board to be the guidance for the staff person to do this economic development circuit riding. And they were going to try to get everything all done by the next Story County Economic Development Committee meeting, which was a week ago. And from what I heard, nothing was brought up at that meeting.
Okay, we're in the comment section here, so I don't want to open it up for discussion again, but so the comment is
something, it was my understanding that something was going to be done and nothing has happened, so, and I was just confirming that, so, okay.
Okay, staff comments. I have no comment either, so staff comments. Okay. Motion to adjourn. Okay. Second. All those in favor? Aye. Okay. Thank you.